Drive Time on BCFM, 5 till 7 on 93.2 FM.
Well, the disturbing issue of suicide now, and in particular teenage suicide clusters in South Wales. Bridgend is the most well-known. A Caerphilly man I'm about to speak to believes, or you're about to hear from, believes he's identified the cause, at least in part, the suicide reduction initiatives that actually do the opposite.
My name is Timothy Rogers. I'm from Rudry, South Wales.
And you've been looking at a lot of activities going on within your, particularly in your local community. Many people know that there's been some mysterious clusters of teenage suicides in South Wales. Have your investigations into what's been going on in your community come up with any possible answers?
Absolute concrete answers. The only thing that we haven't concluded is, were the children subjected to the material encouraging suicide? There's networks operating that's pushing out very damaging material to children. If I can just tell you about a few psychological studies, one is the Werther effect, which is contagion suicide. It's Werther because this was the first incident of contagion suicide in Europe.
Is that W-E-R-T-H-E-R?
Yes, that's right. Now, young Werther wrote a book about his life, a biography. He was a very famous novelist called The Joys of Sorrows. Throughout that book, he wrote about his terrible ordeal as a homosexual, the way he was treated, the joys and sorrows of his life. And at the end of it, the way he couldn't see any way out, so he killed himself. When that book was published, it's been published four times in Europe. Every single time, there's been a huge incidence of cluster suicides. Now, when I started researching this information, as I was just studying what was going on in my community, and it led me to Bridgend, and then I was coming across an unbelievable amount of material that's being pushed out to children through the creative arts and drama theatre networks. What I saw of it was this organisation called Common Purpose, but they're colluding with organisations, theatre networks, and this is all funded by a man called George Soros. He calls himself a philanthropist, but he's trying to establish a population reduction. And apparently they want to reduce the population to 500 million from 7 billion or to a billion.
A lot of it has been giving money to help the poor.
They're not helping the poor, they're actually targeting the poor and deprived communities, and this is what I've also identified. Let me just tell you about another study of suicide, so you know, we're all on the right track, we understand what I'm talking about. Now, I've been looking at images specifically of children with scribbled out faces and children with ropes around their neck hanging in theatre productions. Now, there's something called Schneider's Failings, or it'd make more sense to you if I said Schneider's findings, and basically it's a consolidation of world reports and theories, and professors of sociology have consolidated and refined the reasons, the primers, the mechanical primers for suicide. And three of them are thwarted love, lost belongingness, and assaulted self-image. Now, these are the image particularly that were put out at my community centre, Rudry Parish Hall, South Wales. It was an assaulted self-image of a child. He was standing in front of a traditional church, and it looked, appeared that the spire was a KKK hat. You looked at his face, it was scribbled out. You looked a little bit further down, he had a chalk or a blade in his hand. So you'd automatically presume that he'd scribbled out his own face. You look further down the picture and he'd wet himself. So we've got an image that absolutely fits the Schneider's Failings, which is suicide mechanical primers, on that image for the play for Rudry Parish Hall.
Did that play actually take place then?
It did, and several others, and there was another one with a child that was slumped in a chair. He had a green jumper on, which is identical to the local primary school, which is 500 yards away. He was slumped in a chair with blood coming out of his mouth, with his head down on an angle. It was two adults either side of him looking at him, and he had a reef above his head, and then above that, it was the Babylonian god Moloch, the child sacrifice god. I'm sure I don't have to expand what that play was all about. They then had the Wicker Man. The Wicker Man was a sacrifice symbol To the Babylonian god again, Moloch.
Well, hang on, Wicker Man was a film, wasn't it?
Well, it was, but there's a theory behind it that Wicker Man was used to put lots of children in his belly, and it was children, specific children, to the Babylonian sacrifice god Moloch.
Everyone would agree it's very disturbing having these kind of plays going on in a small village community or anywhere, really.
Right,
but
right.
I mean, your task, in a way, is to actually tie that to those clusters.
Well, no, I didn't tie them to the clusters. The material tied them to that area. One of the plays down there, I watched it, and if you read the book, The Joys of Sorrows by Werther, it was a remake of that book. So they would know that book was the first study on suicide contagion. And the National Theatre of Wales put out the identical production in a theatre for children to watch.
I think there's also a feeling, Tim, that a lot of the modern art is not very good. I mean, we, for example, here in Bristol, we had a Temple Quays when that was built, just near Temple Mead Station, a whole new office complex and a pub called the Knights Templar. There was a giant beetle, black thing, about as big as three or four people, that was put out in front of it. And the office workers, after about 8 months, I think, within the year of the place opening, decided that they didn't want the beetle there. I mean, it didn't seem like the sort of thing they wanted to sit next to at lunchtime, a giant beetle.
Well, what I'm looking at, I repetitively was coming across the same theme. Suicide, self-harming pictures, ropes around children's necks. Some of the directors of the theatre productions on their Twitter was talking about specific material in relation to suicide. I was coming across images and plays, suicide, 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 constantly. I mean, if anybody looked at that in isolation, they'd think to themselves, oh my God, this is awful. When you start putting it together and you're seeing a similar theme, the identical theme almost, in so many theatre productions, you've got to think to yourself, what is going on? So I've studied these phenomena, not just in Bridgend, by the way, but there's also clusters happening around the Aborigines in Australia. They've got children in communities hanging themselves. Los Angeles, 28 children over a period of a few months threw themselves in front of trains. We're having that in Bridgend as well, mind, but this is no longer going in the mainstream media. And I'll tell you about that. There's specific guidelines for the media not to put this material out. Not just glorifying, just reporting on it. Because if you report, this can actually encourage the Werther effect, the suicide clusters. So if you just bear that in mind, that is documented, you can find that anyway on the internet, it's not really complicated, and then you think to yourself, well, if the media reporting it can cause suicides, what if the theatre is ramming her out close and personal to vulnerable young children? And I tell you something, it's very hard to draw some empathy to this, being an adult. I mean, I'm 43 years of age. But I tell you what I can relate to is when I was 8 or 9, I watched a film called The Hand. I snuck downstairs. My mother and father told me not to, and they went to bed. My older brothers and sisters were up. And I watched this film, The Hand. I look at it now, and it's ridiculous. But this gave me nightmares over a period of 6 months.
Are you talking about the old black and white?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, hang on, just to correct you, because the actual title of that film is Peter Lorre's the star of it.
Yeah.
The actual title is The Beast with Five Fingers. I can remember it was particularly brilliant acting by Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
This hand is sort of self-propelling itself by squeezing its fingers and moving it on its own around the house.
Yeah.
And you go around the corner, you can hear the piano playing downstairs, very spooky. And they go around the corner and there's a dismembered hand actually playing the piano.
Yeah.
Very creepy film. And actually quite expensive to buy. I had a look at it a few months ago, funnily enough, online.
Yeah, well, that's right. But that, I mean, a silly film like that now was, as adults, as grown adults, it's like really water off a duck's back. Let me give you another example, and I'm just trying to...
I mean, you watched it as a child, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you shouldn't have done that, but you did, and you say you had nightmares.
Nightmares for months and months after. I wouldn't sleep my own bed. I snuck in my brother's bed late at night because I was petrified this hand was going to get me.
So there are very good reasons why these films are not allowed to be shown to young children.
Absolutely. And let me give you another example. I mean, children are vulnerable, and they should be treated that way until they're grown adults. And we used to have Mary Whitehouse, didn't we? I mean, she was wonderful. At the time, I used to think to myself, God, what's she on about? But once you start to get into this and understand the psychology behind it, you can see why people like this should be watching everything that's going on in theatre and even in schools, because we've identified this material in schools as well. Let me just give you another example. My daughter, she's now 19, she's in university, but when she was 9 or 10, my wife's nieces came down and babysat. We went out for the evening. Everything was okay. The children were in bed. The following morning, my daughter got up and she said, Daddy, she said, I can't stop thinking about death. And I said, what's the matter, babe? She said, I just keep on thinking about death and terrible things. She said, I can't get it out of my mind, she said. And I said, why is that? She said, I think it was to do with a film I watched yesterday called Jeepers Creepers. I went, oh my God, I said, what was you doing watching that? I didn't know what that film was particularly about at the time, but it was clearly a horror film. And then my wife told me then, she's phoned her niece and said, oh my God, you shouldn't have showed her that. It's really upset her. And she was like this for a couple of weeks after. She said to me, Daddy, she said, I can't get death out of my mind.
No, our children need protecting, don't they?
Absolutely.
I mean, even teenagers, anything up to sort of 18, 21, I mean, yeah. 16 maybe, but I mean, they really do need protection from these images and from these horrible ideas.
Yeah. Now, I had a counsellor phone me 2 weeks ago called Liz Alsworth. She's a lovely woman, and she said, Tim, I've watched your video with Brian Gerrish. I'm very concerned, she said, because two children in Grygracker Estate tried to hang themselves a few weeks ago. And we've been informed there was a website called No Balls, and I thought, aye. So I said, okay, I said, which community centre or youth club do they go to? She said, well, I'm not 100% sure, she said. I said, well, I'll tell her what, let me have a little bit of research and I'll get back to you. So I put the phone down, I went straight on the internet and looked at the people who were running a couple of community centres around Grygracker and Bedworth and Pufflepant. I soon come across a lady's name. I put in the search engine, Caerphilly, it came up with Twitter, and the first video on her Twitter was the most appalling, awful, disgusting encouragement of suicide play I've ever seen in my life. It was a young lady about 18, 19 years of age. She had a fairy cake, she was at a party, it was laced with prescription tablets, and she was licking them and smiling on the screen, and then she was individually picking the tablets out of the cake and putting lots of them in her mouth. It was also flashing images come up on the screen saying kill and all sorts of other terrible things. So I phoned the counsellor back. I told her what I discovered. I said, have a look online now. I said, well, I'm on the phone to you. She was going, oh my God, she said, what's going on? I've just made an inquiry. This woman is running a youth club in Bedworth. Now, it is my strong belief that a group with a different ideology to ours, they're not Christian, they're not Muslim, they're not Catholic, they've got a very twisted, sick ideology, and I think this group is deliberately trying to get close to children, and I think the agenda is depopulation. That's ultimately what I think is going on. So what I would like to say to any mother or father is be very, very careful about what sort of material your children are being exposed to, particularly creative arts and drama from youth clubs and community centres.
Now, with the wonders of the internet, a lot of the youngsters will be looking at some of this material on their phones.
That's correct. But that's something that you can monitor to a certain age. But that is not the problem. The problem is direct, up close and personal, awful films and theatre and arts being put out to children. I tell you what else we've come across as well, is that several times now we've come across reports that's been in the mainstream media that some teachers have been given suicide lessons to children, euthanasia. And what they're asking children to do is write their own suicide notes. Now, that's happened several times over the last 18 months.
Can you give me any specific examples?
Yes. In Hawthorne High School, it was mentioned in the Welsh Assembly, it was in the mainstream media, and she asked the children to write how they would kill themselves. Now, we saw this happening in Scotland, in Cornwall, and in Ireland. Now, the suicide rate have gone up in Northern Ireland, 568% in 1 year. This was immediately after they put out the suicide prevention strategies. Now, this sounds an enormous figure, but let me just tell you exactly how it is. From 1999 to 2005, there was an average of 32 suicides of children in a particular category, I think it was 14 to 24. They brought out the suicide prevention strategies in the middle of 2005. The suicide skyrocketed to 137. You're talking about suicides, cluster suicides in geographically small locations. Now, if it can be argued to say, well, hang on a sec, our suicide prevention strategies didn't come out the following year it went up by another 37%. Now, this happened identically in South Wales. Now, I might have a year wrong either way, okay, but the details and the literature is absolute fact. Now, we had suicide prevention strategies set up in Bridgend in May 2005 or May 2006, and then the following January, whichever year it was, the following January, we had the suicide clusters starting in Bridgend. It is my belief that these suicide prevention strategies are not really being set up to help suicides, but to actually precipitate them. I don't say that loosely. I've looked at the material and it's absolutely disturbing. And the figures of suicides are consistent with these organisations being set up, where they're being set up, soon after suicide clusters are starting.
So what would you, as a parent, say to other parents who are worried about the kind of material their youngsters may be exposed to, even under the guise of, hey, this is there to stop suicide?
Be there for your children. And remember Schneidner's failings, thwarted love, they broke up with a relationship, assaulted self-image, lost belongingness, fractured control is another one. You know, you don't have to ram it down your children's throats, because what will happen then is you'll put it into their minds. And after the information that I've studied, I was petrified to speak to my children about suicide. But I did actually a few weeks ago, and I was very, very careful about it, and I can assure you I would never, ever ask them again. But I've always struck a very fine balance with my children. If they do something wrong, I won't overly react, because if you do, your children are unlikely to come to you and say, Dad, Mum, I got this problem. So there's got to be a real careful balance there.
Yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it, for parents with teenagers nowadays. Teenagers can be very free and easy, go their own way, and often the family love and respect can break down sometimes between teenagers and their parents. So obviously that creates a difficult barrier to cross.
It does. And I'll tell you something else as well. I'm not a homophobe, far from it. But I do know that one of the triggers for a suicide is for children to be confused about their sexuality, particularly when they're going through puberty, 14, 15, 16 years of age. And this can also be a factor, and as I said, about whether he was a homosexual itself. So what I would advise parents, I'm not a perfect parent, we all just try our best, but what I would say to parents is just be there for your children and listen to their needs. If they're getting bullied, and don't overreact, so we're there to be able to speak to them, and so they can trust us to come to us with all their problems. And I think that's it. It's been suggested that depression is the factor for suicide, and I just don't buy that. I just don't buy that at all. And I don't care what anybody says, I've read the studies on it. It's a very difficult time for children when they're coming up to their exams, and a very vulnerable time indeed for them, from when they're about 11 till they're 16, 17. So just be there for them as parents.
The other thing, of course, is that we keep hearing about assisted suicide, don't we, in the news? Well, this is something which is supposed to be good. I mean, I must admit, I find it very difficult to get my head around why a doctor would become a doctor to help someone to kill themselves. The other thing, of course, is if someone who's ill decides they do want to end their lives, then that may be just a momentary thing. They may sign the piece of paper, they don't get a chance to reverse the decision, and then of course there's also the possibility of papers for assisted suicide being signed fraudulently.
Well, I'm absolutely glad you brought this subject up, Tony, because I've also followed this side of it. I don't know if most people would be aware of it, but they've got death vans in Holland picking up the disabled, the elderly, and putting them to death without the consent of their family or themselves or the doctor. We're having this drive run straight away through the West again. George Soros single-handedly made the move, being the Rothschilds frontman. He made the move for euthanasia. Watch the telly, it's all over there. They're trying to show sad stories where people were desperate to end their lives. And they're propagating us. What I would say is switch that telly off, get onto the free media and listen to stations, you know, like 93.2 FM. and start to find out what's really going on in our society, because the only way it can get is worse. They're pushing out pathways. Tony mentioned what the doctors are doing last year. You can find this all over the... this was advertised in the mainstream press.
That's right, the Liverpool care pathway. The Daily Mail has gone very big on that, saying that essentially, even though it's called a care pathway, it actually means that life support is being taken away from patients.
Well, it's not just life support is being taken away from them. They're actually withdrawing in the most cruel way food and water from these patients. My mother was a nurse for 40 years. I've been brought up in an environment that we want to care for people. My mother cared for people all her lives. But now we've got doctors introducing them onto what's called pathways. And these elderly people are dying from starvation and dehydration. 130 patients last year they put to death this way. They're also now doing it with babies.
Okay, so what's the larger agenda? What's the wider agenda, Tim?
Right, the wider agenda is destabilisation, depopulation, and to bring on a one-world government. It's all going on right under our noses, and unless people speak out, it's going to go full circle. We're looking at a similar system being built in our country to the Bolshevik system in Russia, and all these forms of government, it's not even communist, it's a dictatorship to bring on this state order. All of these governments end up in genocide. In Russia, we hear about the Jewish Holocaust, which is awful, and with 6 million innocent people lost their lives. But over in Russia, under the Bolshevik murderers, they murdered 60 to 110 million ethnic Russians. I spoke earlier about the civil contingency plan, and they're going to organise a clampdown on society. It's going to be in the next 18 months, 2 years, I believe. They're going to bring on a full dictatorship. This is what we're looking forward towards. So I'd advise people to start researching, you know, and get involved with groups so we can stop this.
Tim Rogers there from Caerphilly with some pretty frightening information. Whether it's true or not is difficult to know, but certainly very, very worrying that these suicide triggers are actually appearing in plays for young children, when we know that that sort of thing is being kept off of films and TV because it can actually trigger suicide. Do contact the programme if you want to know more about that, and I'll put some links up to some good sources for people who are worried about that particular topic of suicide on the website, which is www.thisweek.org.uk after the show.
Drive Time on BCFM, 5 till 7 on 93.2 FM.
And with me is Tim Rogers. Now, Tim, can you tell us about the this network that you discovered in your village in Wales?
Okay, well, after being on the receiving end of some very unpleasant abuse for a very long time, and how these people scapegoated me and my family and my children, one of my children was put into hospital twice from having a baseball bat put across his face, from the professional vindictive rumours that was put around about me and my family. And he also had his trousers and pants taken off him in school. He has learning difficulties. And, you know, it's practically, I mean, the issues have ruined our family life. So last year when they started on me again, their agitation skills, it became absolutely abundantly clear to me that these individuals were looking for a response because of the organising tool they rely on. It relies on a response from the target they're targeting.
So, I mean, you're saying basically they were looking for some kind of reaction, it was a provocation. But I mean, when you started looking into it, what network did you discover?
Right, okay, I've discovered common purpose networks. And these people work in secret. They work under the Chatham House rules, entirely in secret, and they've put these people very close to community centres, parish halls, they've got them in churches, they've put them in police stations, they've put them in very high positions in councils.
And how is it funded?
It's funded by silly old us. I believe last year Common Purpose had almost £100 million given to them from the taxpayer. They've got about, weird different figures, 35,000 or 60,000 or 70,000. But I am not convinced there's that many. I believe there's probably about 15 or 20,000 real nasty subversives And of course, it doesn't mean that everybody who's initiated into common purpose are barred, but if they're not in the first place, they soon are after a couple of years, because they use proper Soviet-type brainwashing techniques on them. And I don't say this lightly. I've read the full material, the full psychological reports on exactly what they do to these people.
Now, you've had your own experience in Wales, but, I mean, how would somebody, do you think, recognise one of these networks if it was going on nearby them, around them, in their own community?
Right, OK, well, that's fairly simple. These people have been put into community centres and parish halls, and what you'll find is there's some sort of disruption going on just under the surface of the community where somebody has been targeted. Somebody's a real problem. And this sounds very real. So these people will keep on banging on about one individual. He's a problem, he's this, he's that, he's the other. Now, there's all sorts of different tactics they use. And if you just sit back and think to yourself, well, if I was paid to agitate people and cause friction and cause and you know, make people respond, you know, anybody could do it. I mean, it's a real simple process. And of course, if you're paid to do it, I think these people are on like 400, 500, 600 quid a week. So they've got plenty of incentive there, and they won't put their hands up and say, oh, I'm doing terrible things, I've got a low lack of empathy and everything else, because they're paid, they're hanging on to their jobs. So what I would say is that if you've got trouble brewing, particularly from a community centre, the chances are that these techniques and these common purpose graduates are using their subversive skills there.
Now, when you initially spoke to me on the phone, Tim, you mentioned the Arab Spring, and I must admit, I find it difficult to see how this kind of network could be in any way linked to the Arab Spring and the uprisings in places like Egypt.
Well, I can actually categorically confirm to you that the Arab Springs were brought down by exactly the same agitators. They were running chaos pilots, And hundreds of other different charity names. These people are encouraged to open up lots of different names, lots of different quangos, so it's very difficult to pinpoint them down, and then very difficult to put the blame on the people who's doing it. Ultimately, the man behind it is George Soros, with his community networks. He was the one who says publicly, I made mistakes with the Balkans. If you look at the history on the Balkans, just print the search engine. I mean, we're talking about absolute horrific crimes against humanity, mass murders against Muslims, mass murders against Christians. You know, these people will work everybody against everybody. They'll work blacks against whites, particularly. Well, hang on, Tony. They'll work Muslims against Sikhs. They'll use Sikhs against Catholics and so on.
Well, I wanted to interrupt you because the Interior Minister of Egypt is going through a trial at the moment, as well as Hosni Mubarak, the president. And as part of that trial, he is accused of planting himself, the Interior Ministry, planting bombs in the Coptic Christian Church in Alexandria with a specific purpose of then blaming it on Muslims to try and get the Coptic Christians and the Muslims fighting each other.
Well, this is how it all works. And I would stress to the Muslim community, particularly the Muslim community, you must learn these practices and turn it back on them. Turn it back on these people who's trying to bring down all the peaceful Islamic countries.
Well, I mean, one of the things to do, of course, is to just simply not be provoked. If someone's
Absolutely.
Trying to provoke you, it's almost like someone's poking you, and you say, well, carry on poking me.
Well, it's human reaction, isn't it? And I'll just take you back to a few years ago where we had the Prophet Muhammad, a degrading depiction put out of him, a cartoon depiction, and you know, there was riots all around the world. Now, this is absolutely classical, and I can guarantee you, if you look at the background of the man who put up those cartoons, I can almost promise you he would be of a particular origin, and he would be using these skills specifically for the Muslim community to react. And this is what they're doing. We've got our so-called government bombing, I mean, this is enough in itself, bombing civilians in Islamic countries. They're taking these countries apart, and the Muslim community, as we would, the Christian community or the Catholic community, we'd all be enraged. But you cannot raise to the bait, because this is exactly what they're doing. Now, and of course,
the other side of all this, if I can just move you on, Tim, is that I know you certainly believe that that there may be some kind of crisis coming in Britain in the future, where you know, a little bit like the Arab Spring. Now, I can remember when the Civil Contingencies Act came in. I think it was around about 2004. Okay, yeah. 2000. I was going to say 2005, 2004.
Yeah.
That's actually a massive change in our civil defence. The civil defence structure, which was put in place after the Second World War, was very much about protecting civilians from foreign attack. The Civil Contingencies Bill and what became the Civil Contingencies Act is quite different, isn't it?
Right. Well, if you have a look at just so you can see this for yourself, pick, you know, find a old insurance document, household insurance from say 03-04. And then have a look at your buildings and contents insurance now or a couple of years later, and you will be absolutely mortified. These people putting these insurance documents together, they paid millions to weigh up the risks and pros and cons. And I'll just tell you briefly, in 2004, my insurance company on the document under Civil War, it didn't even say Civil War, it was Civil Commotion covered. Three words. You have to look at it in 2006, we got two full A4 pages of every single eventuality of civil war, army rising against the government with the police or without the police, and the government against the people and this, that and the other. It just goes on for two full A4 pages. Now, that civil contingency plan is a tool, and it was put in place by the expert Blair. Idiot Blair, if I can say that, and he is going to use this tool to enact a civil disruption. They're going to engineer it. They've got their people almost coming to a full circle. They're consolidating their positions, and when it's ready, they'll agitate in unison, and they'll be able to enact the civil contingency plan, which is one signature from our lovely David Cameron. People will get hurt. This will get violent. There's absolutely no doubt. I've studied this in great depth and great detail, and I know what's coming. These common purpose graduates need to be identified. They need to be arrested. They need to be tried, as much as many of our...
But yeah, but, I mean, hang on a minute. These are community organisers. They haven't necessarily done anything wrong under the law, have they? I mean, you may say that they are, you know, maybe causing problems, but, I mean, ultimately, legally, they haven't.
Well, you're actually wrong, Tony, and I don't mean that in the worst, you know, as an insult onto you, but they are criminals, and if you look at the Alinsky techniques... these techniques rely on a conspiracy to harass, on a conspiracy to terrorize, a conspiracy to provoke a reaction. Now, we've got laws against provocation, but if you don't understand this is going on professionally, you will not be able to put it together.
That's absolutely fascinating, because, I mean, certainly harassment is a criminal offence, isn't it? I mean, ultimately, though, how long do you think... I mean, this is a rather worrying prospect, the idea that someone is actually sitting there behind the scenes planning for some kind of civil war. But how long do you think we've got until this happens? Any ideas?
Well, I read a parliamentary document going back, I think, about a month ago, and me and Brian Gerrish discussed it briefly on UK Column Live. And the parliamentary document was talking about the a revolution. They were talking about Mao. They were talking about Lenin. They were talking about chaos. And they said this revolution will start from the countryside. Now, this is why we got people in key positions in very rural locations around Wales. And, of course, I do know for a fact that these are all over the country. They're in Bristol. They're in Swindon. They're in Bath. So, you know, they will have a controlled civil contingency plan in order. It will happen if this is not brought to book. I can assure you, I've done my studying. I know exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay, so finally, Tim, whereabouts should people go online? Because obviously we're not going to get this on the BBC News to research it further.
Okay, well, what I would say to you was, first, is have a look at Brian Gerrish's work, UK Column Live. He's extensively covered who Common Purpose is, what they are, what their motive is, and I would ask you to study that. I would ask you to learn the procedures of Saul Alinsky Rules for Radicals, Rule 1 to 12. Just put in Google search engine, any search engine, Saul Alinsky, the full list. Have a read through those and you'll be horrified. These are the practices, domestic terrorism that's going on in our communities.
Quite frightening, Tim. Anyway, thanks ever so much for coming in and talking to us about this. I would just also like to say that that if anyone from Common Purpose is involved in any criminal activity, then of course that's for them to look out. But ultimately, Common Purpose, just being a member of Common Purpose, is absolutely not evidence in itself.